Have you ever wondered if sticking needles all over your body can help you get pregnant? Today, I interviewed Emily and Ganche from Aphrodite Fertility Acupuncture, all about how acupuncture can be an incredibly valuable tool along the fertility journey. This is true whether you want to naturally balance your hormones and boost your fertility, or if you are going through fertility treatments like IVF. They explain how it all works in a way I have never heard before. I personally learned so much in this episode. I can't wait for you to benefit from their amazing wisdom and knowledge. Let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Having adequate levels of minerals and proper hydration are essential when balancing your hormones, optimizing your fertility, trying to conceive, or preparing for pregnancy. For Dr. Morgan and I, ingredient quality is of top concern, and that's why we love Relight Electrolyte Powders by Redmond's Real Salt. Relight contains Redmond's ancient, unrefined sea salt, which contains 60-plus trace minerals in and of itself. Relight powders conveniently contain the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and even two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These are essential for hormone balance, energy production, and overall wellness. The best part is they taste delicious and they have so many fun flavors. My personal favorite is lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan loves their strawberry lemonade. Visit redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off any of Redmond's products, from their electrolytes to their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, and bentonite clays. Again, visit redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Here's to happy hydrating along your womanhood and fertility journey. Okay, back to the show. I'm so excited to be interviewing the amazing women, Emily and Ganche, at Aphrodite Fertility Acupuncture, which is a practice dedicated to helping women achieve their dream of pregnancy. Emily and Ganche are true believers in comprehensive integrative fertility care. They have made it their mission to pull women out of the darkness of infertility and guide them to the family they've always wanted. They are highly skilled and knowledgeable in relevant Eastern and Western techniques, so you're always in good hands. They credit much of their patients' success to combining the ancient wisdom of Chinese medicine with modern conventional biomedicine. You'll find just what you need here every step of the way. Okay, Emily and Ganche, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. I'm so excited to talk about all things acupuncture and fertility.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Yeah. Okay. So why don't you just start? Because I know we have a lot of different types of listeners, and some people might be familiar with acupuncture and sort of how that works, and some people might not. And even people who have gone to acupuncture might still not really understand. Can you just kind of give us an overview of how it even works? Like, what is acupuncture? Like, what's happening?
Totally. We like to make it really relatable. So I tend to go through this with all my patients. So when you rub your hands together, it creates a heat, right? Mm-hmm. Movement creates heat. Like when you run, you sweat, okay?
Yep.
And your organs are moving. So your heart pumps and your kidneys filter and your lungs expand. And so there's this heat coming off of the organs that's not really accounted for in Western medicine, okay? Mm-hmm. And so heat is energy. So when you turn on a burner of a stove, it can boil water, it's energy. And so this heat coming off of the organs flows in different patterns in the body, just like your blood vessels flow in patterns and your nerves flow in patterns.
Yeah.
The heat off of your organs flow in certain patterns. And so we call this heat or this energy chi. Okay. Mm-hmm. Think of it as heat. And so the heart heat comes off of the heart, and then goes down into your pinky. And so when you have either dysfunction of the actual organ or of its heat pathway, then you have a certain set of symptoms that they have studied over the course of a thousand years. Like major, you can think of it as sort of like clinical trials. Like these people have these symptoms and it relates back to this organ and its heat pathway. So you can think of like the, if the heat pathway of the heart is like deficient,
yep.
So you have a certain set of symptoms. And if the heat coming off of the heart is like in excess, you can think of it as sort of like inflammation, and you'll see a certain set of symptoms. Or if there's sort of like a physical block or stagnation to that flow of the heat coming off of the heart, then there's another set of symptoms. And so what the needles do is they go along the heat pathway or the mm-hmm. pathway of the organ. And they sort of like, you know, when you get a bee sting, there's a body response, right?
Yeah.
Histamine, and there's a lymph reaction. And you can actually see like the redness around the bee sting. So similarly, when you add something foreign to the body, like a needle, the body response, it has a response. So it's like, what is this foreign thing in my body? And so it sends blood, lymph, histamine to the needle site. And what it can do is push through, let's say, the heart heat pathway that's stagnated, or it can bring up a deficiency in the heat pathway, or it can tamp down like an inflammation response. And that allows the sort of the heat that's coming off of the organ movement to connect back to its pathway. Like there's no more blocks. It can come up or come down. And then the organ itself will function better when its sort of like heat or energy pathway has been cleared.
Oh my gosh. That was a great explanation. I have never heard that before.
Yeah,
and even I, you know, being a naturopathic doctor and having received acupuncture a lot, I actually have never really understood it like that. So that's amazing. What a really great visual to understand. So when we talk about fertility in particular, do you guys see more excess heat or deficient heat, or does it vary? Like, how does that fit into what you just kind of talked about?
Yeah, we definitely see a combination. And the most like complex patterns are a combination of like excess and deficiency, where,
gotcha.
You know, if it's a deficiency based, we are, it's usually deficiency of blood. So if they have these sort of really like light periods or dizziness or kind of like fatigue, poor memory, that is all considered a deficiency of blood. But there's often also a like excess patterns. So in Chinese medicine, we talk about the liver organ or the liver pathway. That has a lot to do with our like mental emotional state. So sometimes the energetic function of the liver is like stagnated. That is also kind of a type of like excess pattern that can cause things like migraines or tinnitus or just like really tight wiry muscles. So it's a combination of things that we're seeing, and that acupuncture is really great at kind of like teasing apart which is which. And we work to kind of clear or tamp down the excess and really kind of bring down the nervous system, reduce those symptoms, but also like nourish and like tonify and like rebuild them. And that really is what we need to do, is kind of treat both.
Yeah. I'd say also like a common pattern is someone comes in and, you know, they lay down and their abdomen is literally cold. And so more than the rest of their body. And what that says to us is like just purely like circulation isn't getting to the ovaries and uterus, and you need blood to pull the hormones from the brain to the sites, the receptor sites. And so oftentimes there's like Gonche said, like the deficiency of blood getting to those organs. And then the excess usually shows up as like emotional excess.
Okay.
And so excess is heat really in Chinese medicine. And so when you have a lot of heat coming off of the heart, because the heart is also heart and liver are very much entwined in like the emotional aspect. If you think of heat always rises. Okay.
Yeah.
So if there's like too much heat coming off of these organs, it will rise to the head, and then you will have like anxiety. You will have insomnia. You'll have difficulty sleeping. This is like literal heat coming up. And oftentimes women feel flushed here and have cold. So like the deficiencies in the uterus and ovaries, so cold abdomen, and then the heat rising.
Interesting.
And instead of like cold and heat merging into that sort of like yin and yang, they have like really separated. And that also creates a sense of being sort of out of body. Like a lot of women describe infertility as like not feeling like themselves. Like, I wish my body was working, not feeling like themselves. And it's just like sort of separation of the, like these two different patterns.
That's so interesting. So when you say blood deficiency, because I know when I've been to acupuncture at different times, I feel like some of the terms that are used correlate with the, you know, I'm a naturopathic doctor, but I know in Chinese medicine, you still consider how we practice more Western-like. And some of the terms kind of correlate and some are different. So when you say blood deficiency, does that literally mean someone doesn't have enough blood? Or is that in reference to something else, like your blood's not very rich in nutrients or that your blood isn't moving well? Like, can you describe that for people? Because I think that comes up a lot, especially when we talk about menstrual cycles and people will be like, eat blood building foods. And people are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's such a cool question. You know, you likely have enough blood circulating through your system. The way we see it is like, it's nutritive properties that the physical like substance of blood is there, but it's not acting on the tissues the way that it should be.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I'd say like, so blood in Chinese medicine is also considered classified as like yin, and yin is like your blood and your fluid and your substance. It's like your grounding, qualities of your body, and yang is like effervescence and the energy of your body. And so when you have blood deficiency, there's, a sort of lack of the ability of the to feel grounded, and blood is substance, so it will ground you.
Gotcha.
And so we're talking both about sort of like the energetics of the blood, and it probably, if you were talking like correlation to Western, has to do, if I had to sort of guess what the Chinese were trying to get at, is like the sort of, yeah, like the amino acid base and sort of like molecular base of blood.
Yeah.
That the structure, like things are carried in the blood, and that is very rooted versus like the heat that comes off of you when you sweat. Like that is very like effervescent. And so blood deficiency shows up as, it can actually show up as like anemia. So there's like the direct correlation, but then it can also show up as sort of being pale. That's also very like in the physical body.
Gotcha.
Light periods. Yeah. So like Gonche said, it really has to do with the ability to uptake the blood at its like fullest, use the blood in its fullest function.
Gotcha.
And what's interesting about like the like excess and deficiency, like we were talking about in the beginning, is that by having like a deficiency of blood, where the blood's not getting to where it needs to go, or like really nourishing the, whether that's like the tissues itself, the uterine lining, or like the spirit and helping them feel grounded, but there will also be like blood stagnation. So the two kind of like go hand in hand, where if there's not enough blood, think of like a river flowing, where if there's really little river in the water, it's going to like pool in these like shallow pools and be kind of like stagnant, and there's sediment and kind of a thickening of the water as opposed to it like flowing as a river. So the two kind of go hand in hand.
So for someone who has a cold abdomen, I mean, I know I have in the past, you know, felt my abdomen and it's been cold. In Chinese medicine and acupuncture too, do they care much about like why that's happening, or it's just like, this is what we see, and so we're going to release whatever blockages with the needles or whatever? And if you care about why, do we know like why? Like, why do some women have cold abdomens? Like, that feels like a big problem when it comes to fertility if you're not getting blood flow.
Yeah, totally. I think it's both. So there's like the root of the problem and treating the symptoms of the problem. And so what initially, like, we immediately treat the root, the symptoms, but we're always thinking about sort of the root, why, what's going on here. And from a Western perspective, it could be just sort of congenital, like you have smaller blood vessels and they just don't happen to cross into the lower abdomen. in a way that's like conducive for fertility. It could be also sort of like your lifestyle isn't nourishing like deep blood flow, so you're dehydrated, right? It could be literally that. It could also be sort of like, again, energetic. Now we're getting into like traditional Chinese medicine. There could be like this disconnect between the brain and the lower abdomen, and the communication energetically isn't being pulled there. And then when you don't have energy there, then you don't have heat. And so like when we work on the TCM level, we are moving like the heat of the organs around. When we're working on the Western medicine, we're literally just putting needles over the ovaries, which will cause a response from a foreign body entering like the abdomen, and like blood will respond. So it's, we are constantly sort of working in both realms, thinking about the theory behind both realms of like why, let's say, a woman wouldn't have a cold, would have a cold abdomen.
Yeah.
So you can also think of, we also think of like things like thyroid's a big, you know, heat modulator.
Right.
And so we combine both the view of the body in the Western and the view of the body in the Eastern, and sort of treat according to both systems.
That's awesome. I'm sure you guys have a lot in your brain.
Mashup of information.
Yeah.
Switching between different frameworks. It's really
Oh my gosh, that's so fascinating. So I know, so you've talked about kind of deficiency, and I know that the term liver comes up a lot in Chinese medicine, but then we talk about the liver, you know, in the Western side of its ability to detox and sort of get rid of hormones and stuff. So are those correlated when someone says like, I have a liver qi deficiency or something like that? Does that mean that you can't detox well, or is it more on the heat side, like that you're talking about? Do those correlate? Because I know with fertility, the liver is important in our world, but maybe for different reasons. Can you kind of talk to me about the liver and what that means?
Yeah. So the liver is like in Chinese medicine, it has in it. So in Western medicine, it has a lot of function in processing, right? Yeah. Like, and so all that processing creates a lot of heat, like from the beginning, right? And so all of that heat usually comes out in this energy we call qi. So liver qi is the ability of the liver to process hormones, okay?
Gotcha.
You kind of think of it that way, sort of correlating. And oftentimes that excess, like it's very yang, so it's very like masculine energy, if you want to think of it, like very outward and go and forward. And so oftentimes that gets excessive and stagnates. And so what we'll see is like liver qi stagnation is actually the sort of the biggest pattern we see. And that is like a stagnation of this processing. And so it's not able to process out the toxins and the hormones, right?
That's so, that's like so a combination
of Eastern and Western sort of fused together.
Yeah. I'm asking all these questions really selfishly because like these are the things I feel like I've been told, but I think it's helpful to like relate them back because even for me, like I shared with you guys before the talk that I've been really sick in my pregnancies, and I know the acupuncturist I was seeing here in Idaho said like so many times, like all of the signs, whatever they were pointing to my liver having an issue. Mm-hmm. And I know from like the Western side, my liver has a hard time detoxing, you know, from like a truly Western side, I have like genetic SNPs that affect my ability to process estrogen and to get toxins out. And I've always had issues in that, but she would also say like, there's so much liver stuff, and she'd look at my tongue, and, you know, I always wonder, is that why I'm so sick in my pregnancies? Or is that, you know, something different because I don't know, it's like hard for me to process things and get stuff out. So I just wondered how that kind of correlated too. Cause for someone listening, you know, I think acupuncture is not only helpful for getting pregnant, but maybe optimizing your body before you actually are. Can you speak to that? Like, how does that correlate to have?
Yeah. Before we go on to the pre-pregnancy, I just want to address like the liver. So when you have this sort of stagnation, right, The energy of the liver has a certain pathway, right?
Yep.
And let's say yours is, has a congenital inability, right, to like process that. So the heat from the liver's like trying really hard, producing all this heat, and it gets like stagnated. And then when that gets stagnated, like they're all your organs are in your abdomen, right? And so when it gets stagnated, like the organs near it, like also get sort of stagnated. And right next near the liver is like the stomach. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so if you have like stagnated liver energy, then the stomach's energy, which is, or heat that's coming out of the stomach's processing that is supposed to be downward moving, is maybe being blocked by the liver stagnation, and you're getting
right?
The stomach's energy now, instead of going, the processing of the stomach, instead of going down, is coming up because it is being blocked by like the energy of the excessive energy of the liver starting to like muck up and stagnate the abdomen. And
wow.
So if your acupuncturist is probably working on smoothing out the liver's heat and getting it to sort of calm down, and so that its stagnated heat can sort of move out of the way, and then your stomach heat coming off of its processing can turn around and go back down.
Wow.
Instead of coming up and out because it can't go anywhere else.
Right. Oh my gosh, that's so fascinating. So this is so cool for me. Maybe the listeners are like, what are you talking about? But I'm having a great time. So I'm sure that people love it.
Cool, like, wait, framework, because
yeah,
all are really in relationship with each other. And so like this pattern that Emily's describing is called liver overacting on like stomach. So
yeah,
it's like there's kind of these like power dynamics, so to speak, between the organs that are either exacerbating aggressively one of its functions or like suppressing or downregulating the functions of another. And it's,
yeah,
really cool.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. Okay. So do you guys look at tongues? Do you do tongue analysis?
We do.
Yeah.
So,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, tell us about that. Like, I think some people are so fascinated to know that you can look at someone's tongue and then kind of tell what's going on in their body. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So the tongue is a map of the internal organs. So if you look at the tongue, all of the major internal organs, so the liver, the stomach, the kidneys, the heart, and the lungs are all mapped onto the surface of the tongue. So by looking at the tongue and the different areas of it, we're able to tell how like the energetic function of those internal organs are functioning, but also the state of the fluids in the body. So if there's, there should be a light moisture to the tongue. But if there's a lot of like dryness where they're kind of like constantly parched, or if there's excess moisture where it's kind of like slick and slimy on the surface, or, we'll also look at the coat. The coat should be like, it's called thin white. If it's really thick and kind of like,
sticky.
Yeah. Like sticky, or like cheesy in a way, that tells us about the state of the internal fluids of the body. And we want there to be plentiful fluids to like lubricate all the tissues and to like nourish the blood and to like really moisten the body, but in excess. And that usually happens if there's the functions of some of the other organs are not working, we can't like transform the fluids, then there could be like excess coating or moisture on the tongue. So looking at the state of the fluids, that tells us about if the person is prone to being like damp, you know, so if they're prone to more like brain fog, fatigue, like low energy after eating, kind of maybe prone to like yeast infections, or if they're more like dry or like yin deficient. So, insomnia, irritability, or like thirst, that tells us about the fluids. And then also the shape of the tongue is really informative. So we look at both like how far out someone's able to stick out their tongue.
Mm.
They're able, like only able to.
What does that mean? If someone can stick it out really far, what does that mean?
Yeah. So that
more the shortness that like is what we look for.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's like, it's really strained and how they stick out their tongue, that tells us that there's kind of like a congenital like deficiency.
Yeah. Like when they were being made and their mouth was being like produced in their mother, there was some sort of deficiency, right? That where the development was sort of shortened.
Gotcha. So that, wow.
That shows up often in like fertility issues that tend to be of like maybe the genetic type, like the congenital type, because they maybe had deficiency in their own development.
Interesting. Wow.
But sort of at its simplest, like the tongue is a muscle, right? And looking at the tongue tells us the state of the muscles and the tissues of your body.
So cool. So for people who are listening, if they want to go look in the mirror and they have things like patches or cracks or like thick coatings or redness and things like that, these are all not, you know, ideal, right? Like this would be a good reason to go see an acupuncturist and see what's going on.
Yeah. And it's like the tongue does change over time. This is more very quickly changing. The tongue is more representative of like, you know, a period of time, whereas the pulse is just kind of like that acute, particular moment. Yeah. Acute. Yeah. Let's say the stairs or something. But, you know, you always want to get good light coming in. Mm-hmm. Cracks, like fissures. And then also like the shape, if it's like really puffy, that tells you about like the state of your digestion, if you're prone to like loose stools or fatigue, or if it's just like really red. Going back to the liver is mapped onto the sides of the tongue. So if it's really red on the sides or there's no coat on the sides, that tells us that there's just like deficient, like kind of fluid moisture in the body. So what about
like an empty patch? Like that's, I've been experiencing that a lot in my pregnancy and it changes all the time. My tongue is different like every single day. I'm like, what is going on? But it'll be like a smooth, like glossy patch, you know, that's not white, like kind of in the back. What does that mean?
That usually that has to do with like stomach heat, like patchwork. And that makes really so much sense. Like your liver is overacting, your stomach heat is coming up, like you are suffering from this, you know, a moment in your pregnancy where that is all coming up and out, and it's showing up because it's not like we're just sort of like, oh, what does that mean? Like these things have been mapped and correlated over like almost 2,000 years.
Yeah, so that's amazing.
It makes complete sense.
Wow.
Other patterns that we often see, especially in infertility, are like a red-tipped tongue.
Uh-huh, yep.
That's like the tip of the tongue is correlated to the heart again. And so that's sort of a heart heat being excessive, meaning like the emotional component being high and then not being able to ground that heat from coming up. So you have anxiety and insomnia and maybe like night sweating.
Oh my gosh, that's so fascinating. I just think this is all so fascinating. So for someone who is thinking about kids, maybe they aren't struggling with infertility, but they just are thinking about kids, do you think that acupuncture is helpful for them, or this acupuncture is better for people who are trying to conceive and not having success, or what? Like, tell me who should go to acupuncture who's thinking about kids.
You know, ideally we are reaching women who are in the like at least in the 3 month time period prior to trying to conceive. Mm-hmm. The reason is because egg quality is affected 3 months prior to ovulation, where there's a deep kind of chromosomal activity where they're separating and dividing, and acupuncture really works on this level. So if we are starting acupuncture treatment, we are able to positively affect the quality of the egg that's an ovulated 3 months later, in addition to really like boosting the blood and regulating the nervous system, and kind of treating these patterns like we're talking about. That's where we like would love to reach women. And of course, you know, people often don't know that they would benefit until they're like deep into trying and not having success. So, in that 3 month time period is golden. And that way we also have time to address like underlying factors if they're at play, that we want to work on, such as like PCOS or, inflammation or other things like that.
So, go ahead.
No, I think ideally we like at its root, we want to work on the chromosomal level of optimizing egg quality. And as you know, there's the critical 90 days before the attempting to conceive. But oftentimes people are like, well, I don't know what's going on. We've been trying for a long time or I'm in IVF and like we haven't had success. So I might as well try magic. And they turn to us. Right. Yeah. So we really see most of our patients in the middle when they suspect that they have some deep sort of infertility issues. And so what we can do at those periods is we actually do a lot of deep sort of diagnosis work in helping and also helping women sort of advocate for how to talk to their MD or their REI about like what factors besides sort of surface level could we be addressing or looking further at. So we do like a lot of coaching and advocacy help for these women and explaining sort of what their doctor is attempting. We do a drawing of like the HPO access for every patient who comes in, and then like overlay sort of IVF medication on top of that. So it's like a lot of education. So oftentimes these women come in feeling very lost.
Yeah.
Like what is going on and what is my doctor doing and why isn't it working? And like, so we open the door to like education.
Yeah.
And then in that, on top of that, we add Eastern medicine to help sort of calm the body, regulate the nervous system, which can create all of the sort of heat dysfunction of the organs, right? Because that's at the sort of central level. And then work on, the sort of symptoms of infertility. So it's more than just Eastern medicine. It's like really.
Yeah, like all of it.
Human process.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. There are so many factors that impact egg quality. Stress, toxins, and energy issues are just a few. Stress and toxins increase oxidative damage that negatively impact your eggs, and eggs need adequate mitochondrial energy to mature properly. It's so important to support your eggs no matter where you are along your fertility journey. I personally love Needed's egg support product to do just that. I helped design this formula, so I obviously love it, but even if I hadn't, it would be the one I would recommend to my patients and clients. This formula is an antioxidant and mitochondrial powerhouse that supports oxidative damage and the energy powerhouses, mitochondria. It has key ingredients like L-carnitine, green tea extract, PQQ, and ALA. I love pairing it with Needed's prenatal to get your essential nutrients, as well as their CoQ10 for an antioxidant boost. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER at checkout to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show. That's amazing. So with someone, for example, a lot of medicine is looking at clues, both in the physical and in labs and assessments and however it's done, and putting people into groups and categories. Like you mentioned PCOS, you know, in the Western model, someone with PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome would have a similar collection of symptoms, you know, or evidence like polycystic ovaries, lots of cysts on the ovaries, high androgens or high testosterone, irregular cycles, and then you're kind of put into this box of PCOS. In Chinese medicine and TCM, which is traditional Chinese medicine for people who don't know, is that similar? Like would most women coming in with quote unquote something like PCOS or endometriosis, would they have similar patterns that you're talking about with these heat and excess? Or someone could have a traditional conventional diagnosis, like 10 women could have the same conventional diagnosis but present completely differently in Chinese medicine?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's this phrase in Chinese medicine called like one disease, 100 patterns, 100
okay.
patterns of disease. So there's, you know, someone could have, 10 different people could have a Western medicine like diagnosis, but present completely differently. You know, clinically, we have kind of seen patterns with different, different women who have PCOS but present completely differently, and how that kind of slots into a few different Chinese medicine patterns. So that's something that we like kind of have identified clinically, but they're often like really, really different. And even with PCOS, there's so many different ways that it could present that is not like according to that hitting two out of the three criteria.
Yeah.
So much of our work is educational, like Emily described. And I think what really makes us stand out, like compared to other acupuncturists is that like we're very like solutions oriented. It's like we're helping to identify what could be at play, but then giving them an action plan to, like, here's what to do, here's what to talk to your doctor about, like we can make this better. You know, I had a patient once who went to see another acupuncturist who was just like hit with like all these different like Chinese medicine diagnoses that they didn't understand, that they're like, oh my God, I'm so deficient, you know, which is like a charged word. And no idea like how to treat it. And so we are really here to like, yes, we're treating, you know, according to your Chinese medicine pattern, but we're also here to like uplift you and support you and know that there's like a path forward. We're not just gonna like slap diagnoses on you and make you feel like that's all that you have, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So are there certain conditions around fertility that acupuncture excels at exceptionally? Like if someone came to you and saw you for a period of time, maybe they wouldn't need to go down the IVF path or something like that. Like, are there things that shine more than others? And are there other conditions where you're like, we help, but they might still need additional support? You know, I don't know. I'm just thinking like endo, for example. I don't know how endometriosis, I think, is just like really challenging. Maybe you guys have different experiences with it, but something like PCOS might be something easier to support than something like endo. But where do you guys see that in your world?
Yeah, it is. Speaking to the, like sort of the last question, it is all curated to how the patient comes in. So yes, where acupuncture absolutely shines is like anovulation. Like we can get to ovulate, like absolutely. Whether that is in like, if it presents in the PCOS world or hypothalamic amenorrhea, like we can get you to ovulate.
For amazing.
Sure. And then the things that need sort of integrative care are, there's oftentimes women come in with diminished ovarian reserve and they don't know that they have it. Right. And then we get, so we get their blood drawn and let's say, you know, their AMH is like 0.1, you know, and they're like 36.
Yeah.
And you're like, we could spend the time to help you get pregnant and regulate your hormones. And it could take, you know, 4 cycles, but like, the goal is to get you pregnant. Like, and so we don't want to, you know, put Eastern medicine first and take like the long road and the natural road to get you. Like there is urgency to your case, especially if you want to have more than one kid. And that's when we're like, let's work integratively. Like here, let's point you to the IVF doctor that we trust here. And like, the goal isn't for us to be like, ooh, Eastern medicine is the best medicine. You know, like it's like, the goal is healthy, happy baby. So like, if that means getting you to an IVF doctor, like, let's go. Like, here's who we trust.
Yeah. So it's really evaluating where someone's at, where they're at in their timeline. So how does that work with your integration with fertility clinics? Because I do see, you know, even me going through IVF, I feel like the IVF clinics are really more open to acupuncture than like any other like integrative support, which is great. I don't really know how that has come about because they're kind of, you know, most clinics are kind of clueless about everything else. So how does that work and why is acupuncture so used in the IVF space and how does that work with you guys? Like how do you guys work together, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I think there was a study that came out that said that acupuncture could increase IVF success rates.
Gotcha.
And after that study, you know, IVF clinics have to publish their results.
Yeah.
Right. And so they're like, well, we don't get it, but like if this is going to increase our success and our sort of like publish rates, then okay. You know, like then here, go to an acupuncturist. You know, we often get, you know, we don't know what they're doing, but like, go get the magic. Or whatever, you know? They don't let us do herbs. So like where it sort of crosses over to like your fields, like they don't know what herbs do and they can't control them. And IVF is all about control.
Yeah.
And so I think once they sort of like open the doors to us because it will help them with their stis, you know, statistical status. Mm-hmm. Then they started seeing like, oh, like when we do send our patient to an acupuncturist and the follicles develop well when they had, like, let's say, stopped, and then they go back after acupuncture and the follicles, like, had started growing again, like, and they're like, okay, we don't know how it works, but, like, they start to gain trust in, like, what we're doing and what we can, and how we can influence in a positive way their outcomes.
That's awesome.
And then the doctors that we work with here, Dr. Chang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's my doctor.
He's your doctor, yeah.
so cute.
yeah, he's amazing. And he is from Japan. So I think they're just more open to it in general. And then the other IVF clinic that we talk about often to our patients is Pearl.
Yeah.
They, Dr. Davis went through IVF. And so, and she used acupuncture. So it's like she, like viscerally understands the benefit as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So for anyone listening, you guys are in San Diego and Dr. Chang is at Hanabusa IVF and Mini Pearl. It's called Mini Pearl, right?
Yeah. Pearl and Mini IVF.
Or Pearl. Yeah. Mini IVF. Yeah. They both do Mini IVF. I sought out Dr. Chang because he was a big pioneer in Mini IVF. They're both great, great clinics that I recommend. So even if you live in, like, the LA area, I have a bunch of patients who have, like, driven down to see them.
So worth
I'm sure there's great clinics in LA. I just don't know them, you know, like I do the San Diego world. And even now, since I've moved to Idaho, I fly back for my transfers and stuff because I just love them so much. So shout out to them. Amazing. So how does that work? Do you, or do you guys ever work with people who are doing medicated cycles, not necessarily IVF? And can you help people's, like, response? Because I know a lot of my patients who have come to me after doing medicated rounds feel so terrible. They almost feel worse than they did before going in. Is that something that you can help with? And how sort of does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's really, like, the kind of the first step in dipping their toe into, like, Western medical, like, Western fertility support, you know, before moving into IVF, if they've been trying for a period of time and we're not getting there and we see, let's say their luteal phase is trending shorter and it's, you know, it's 11, 10, 9 days and they're having lots of spotting before their period starting, then we could consider doing, like, a medicated natural transfer cycle if they're medicated natural, like, timed intercourse cycle.
Yeah.
So we'd recommend they talk to their doctor about doing like letrozole or Clomid to support that follicular development. And then we have our patients use a device called Anito. So it's a hormone tracking device that doesn't only track LH, but also estrogen and progesterone. And so we're able to see in real time, like, how their follicles are responding, and how their hormones are responding to the medication. And so that's often not always in conjunction with them actually going to the clinic and doing monitoring, checking their follicles on ultrasound. But it's really, I think, a excellent combination is by they're still trying naturally, but we're able to get the benefit of follicular development. And also that's going to help their progesterone as well. So if we think that maybe that would be the next step, we would tell them to talk to their doctor about trying, like, a few rounds of letrozole.
Yeah, but you guys would be able to help with, like, optimizing even that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. What acupuncture does, again, is, like, it takes the nervous system offline. So anytime you, like, bring down fight or flight response, then you have a better hormone receptor response. And so if you're adding, like, a Clomid or letrozole into the game, right, like, it's all about receptors on the pituitary and hypothalamus. And so, like, we are able to take the sort of guard off the body. And then also with blood flow, again, like, with the needles over the ovaries, and it's just bringing what the medication is doing on the brain, particularly for, like, these intro medicated cycles, down, and, like, the hormone response down to the ovaries. And then having the needles particularly right over the ovaries and almost tapping on the ovaries, I would say, gets a better response as well. So, like, you know, when you let's say massage a muscle, then your muscle feels better. Same thing if you insert needles over the ovaries, then they, like, respond better.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the receptor uptake is higher.
Yeah. So you've mentioned the nervous system, and I know we talk a lot about stress in the nervous system, or I do, or I try to. Maybe people don't know I talk a lot about it, but in my mind I do. And, you know, it's very classic for people to be like, oh, just don't stress, you'll get pregnant, you know, that, which is such a triggering thing to say. But there is a reality in that a heightened, you know, sympathetic or fight or flight nervous system can impair fertility. So when you talk about the organs and heat, you know, we've talked about that whole analogy, and I can like visualize, I'm very a visual person. But when you talk about the nervous system and how you guys can kind of bring that down, can you speak to that? Does that work on a different level than the heat, or they're connected? Because there is this reality where when women get more into that parasympathetic, however that works for them, it seems like fertility flourishes better.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I say, I mean, think of the symptoms when you're like in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. Those are heat symptoms. Like heart is pumping, flushed, like alert,
anxious, right?
Sort of like ready to spring, right? And that is all, those are all like heat symptoms, like energetic, like high energy symptoms. And so that is oftentimes chronic, right? Stress, I always, people always come in like, I'm here because like my doctor said I need to stress less. I'm like, hold on. Like there are a lot of people who, there's like so much guilt around around their stress levels and not being able to get pregnant. Like it's my fault that I'm not getting pregnant because I'm so stressed. I'm like, time out. That is, first of all, that's BS. Let's just, there are plenty of people who are stressed and get pregnant. What we want to do is not have you be up and stuck in fight or flight just as baseline, right? You can have stress. Yeah. You can have cortisol come up. But what we need is for you to, for it to come down and let the body give the body a chance for the hormones to flow, because the body will always prioritize host over reproduction, right? Yep. And so if it's thinking it's running from a bear, it will prioritize getting away from the bear and those like a really high alert symptoms over hormone flow, rest and digest. And so what we say to patients is like, you can have stress. You can have stress at your job, but like you need, what we need to do is take it offline.
Yep. You have to be able to walk back down the stairs.
Yeah.
I guess the polyvagal theory where like you walk up the stairs and walk down the stairs.
Totally. Yeah. And so the nervous system being stuck in fight or flight, like fight is like all is heat, is like inflammation. It's, it shows up in the body that way, right? These like big heat signs, anxiety, insomnia, you know, sweating at night, you know, these sorts of heat signs. And so what acupuncture does really well, and one of the points I love is like here, because it's right next to the vagus nerve, is to tell the body that it's safe.
Yeah.
And to like kick the vagus nerve and like the rest and digest and reel the heat back in, ground it down to the feet, which are, which is like very much like either cool, your yin or your cooling system, like comes, brings heat, reins it in and pulls it back down. And so you feel safe and settled. And in those moments, it allows the hormones and the parasympathetic nervous system to work well. And also sort of balance out. Like you, also you don't want to be in parasympathetic mode all the time either, right? It's this yin and yang that is always at play in nature. Like you want to have the ability to have alertness and like executive power to like move quickly and thought, but you also want those times of like sort of internal reining in and grounding.
Yeah.
That really well. Most patients get on the table and they like go into this deep sleep. Like their aura ring or whatever is like, whoa, you've gone into the most rest that you've ever gotten. Needles in you. And that speaks to like the power of giving the nervous system a chance to come offline.
Yeah, I know. But I feel like stress is really misunderstood.
Yeah.
It is. And we always like tell our patients the goal, like Emily said, like the goal is to like not have stress. It's just to have more of like a resiliency or like a rebound.
Resilience.
In this high level. And, you know, that's the pattern that we see the most is like, you know, fight or flight, that's constant. But we also see women who less often, but they're in more of like a freeze state. Where they are, and you could kind of see it in their face, their voice. You know, in Chinese medicine, we don't just diagnose based off like their tongue and pulse, but also in like their, in Chinese medicine, we call it their shen, but it's like their spirit, how they animate.
Yeah.
So we see women who tend to be in more of like a freeze or shut down state, have like lower voice.
Yeah,
or
it's like a...
like a veil.
Yeah, veil. It's
good. Yeah. Like not making as much eye contact, like slow to move, really quiet. And so by the other end of the token, like acupuncture really works to like help to animate them and bring a little bit of fire back.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just both ends of the spectrum, and it's really very powerful.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm totally sold. I'm like, I need to go back to acupuncture. I'm sad I don't live in San Diego anymore. I can see you guys.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to ask you guys is about males, because, you know, I'm really passionate about male fertility, obviously, since that was our issue. Do you guys find that acupuncture can help with male fertility? And do you, is that something that you feel like should be happening if someone's listening? And, you know, whether they understand what's going on with their partner's health or not, do you recommend that they have their male partner do acupuncture as well, or is it just the females?
Yeah, we definitely recommend it, because again, everyone has like their organs that maybe are deficient or in excess, and that applies to men as well.
Yeah.
However, we would say that the sort of burden of infertility lands on the female. And so oftentimes, I mean, the majority of our patients are female.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of hurdle that women are oftentimes faced with in sort of convincing the males in their lives to come get acupuncture. I think also there's a myth and some fear in men that we're going to be like putting needles into their testicles, which is not what we do. We can, right? Like there's fear around needles and acupuncture in general. And then when you talk about males and fertility, it's like even more fear.
Yeah.
And so we would love in an ideal world to be working with the second part, you know, the partner in the infertility journey, because it's oftentimes on the male factor side. What we do is we provide, you know, structure to their lifestyle and supplements. Yeah. And that's a way that we're able to reach the male partner.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while we get the partner coming in.
A motivated man.
Yes.
That's so cool.
It is cool.
But, they are committing for less. You know, with our female patients, just like 99%, they are like really in it for the long term, and they're like very committed. With the male partners who have the male factor, they're just coming in for like a short term, you know, IVF, maybe for like 4 to 6 weeks prior to like providing their sample, you know, at the time of fertilization. So it's like a lot shorter, but like when you can get them in, it's so cool. And they also end up feeling great.
Yeah.
But it is a high like hurdle to jump with even getting the male partner on board with the lifestyle changes. Like there's a real, it's like a real resistance in them stopping to smoke weed, you know,
or
cooling down on the energy drinks. But, you know, I just really coach our patients. I like it. Sometimes they need a little bit of time, but like some male partners definitely.
There's almost like if the male were to like admit they had a piece in it, it's like a hit to their,
Their ego. Yeah.
Like, oh, my sperm are strong. Like,
Oh yeah. I see it all the time.
My sperm are going to get you pregnant. You know, like it's a weird hit to like their machismo or whatever by admitting it. And it's just like not the physical reality of it. But that's the sort of burden we have to jump. And also, they also aren't living their period every month. And so there's just like, oh, you know, it'll happen when it happens. And the female is like getting her period every month and like physically feeling the response of not being pregnant, and like it's hitting them emotionally.
It's emotional. Yeah.
So much more, because there's a physical aspect to like a no, right? Like I'm not pregnant. And so there's a lot of coaching and like how to speak to their partner about it.
I love that.
And also we provide maybe the missing support that the male and the missing like sort of validation and understanding that maybe their partners aren't able or aren't even aware that they're not giving to their
yeah I love that. Okay. So last question before we wrap up is I have been asked this question a lot, which is how long should you do acupuncture, you know, for the fertility journey? I'm sure it varies person to person, but in an ideal situation, like, is one treatment even worth it? You know, do you need to do it for 4 months? You know, what is the time frame that people are looking at, and how often do they go in? Is it every week? Is it twice a week? Is it once a month? Like, what does that normally look like?
I'd say let's start with frequency, once a week at least, right? Mm-hmm. Because we ask that our patients come in once a week because your hormones are literally changing every week. Like the dominant hormone in the, you know, follicular phase, estrogen, and then LH, and then progesterone. So we want to hit each one of those changes. And to do that, we need to see you at once a week. I would say in an ideal world, we'd see you for the three months preconception. And then the fourth month, we see this big increase in our pregnancy rates because we have been influencing egg development for those 3 months prior.
Amazing.
And then, but honestly, like the, in IVF and transfer, like literally just having transfer acupuncture can move the needle. Like you have the, FET acupuncture before and after, and that's what they've actually studied. And these are people who weren't having acupuncture beforehand. It was just literally those two sessions on the day of transfer, and there was an increase. So
amazing.
It really does. It depends on the case, but, you can influence pretty quickly.
Oh, that's so cool.
And they're like all the stages too. So, you know, if they're gearing up for their transfer and their lining isn't coming up the way we want it to, then we'd encourage them to come in twice a week and add like other like adjunct therapies. So it's highly curated, but consistency always is going to be where we see the most benefit.
Yeah. Amazing. Oh, I love that. Okay. So where can people find you, follow you, work with you? Tell us all the things.
Yes. Our website is aphroditefertility.com. And so are all of our socials. So Instagram, there's a ton of, we're an education brand, heavy brand. Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of information on our Instagram and also on our website. And we have a blog. And then just say hi. We love to actually, even just if you email us and you're like telling us your case, we're here to provide to help women like out of the darkness of infertility. That's really the goal. So even if you just have a case and you're living in whatever, you know, London or whatever, you just email us and we'll look at it. We're fertility nerds. So we're
here to help. Amazing. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge and wisdom with us. And I can't wait for everyone to hear this episode.
Yeah. It was great chatting with you.
This was fun.
Yeah.
Of course. Do you have your heart set on starting a family and are eagerly preparing to begin trying within the year? Have you been actively trying to conceive for several months? Do you have a burning desire to optimize your chances of conception and avoid the distressing path of infertility? Or have you been navigating infertility for a while, yet you yearn for new solutions, a supportive environment, and an approach that addresses the root causes of infertility? Our current fertility system is broken. Many couples receive almost zero support on optimizing their health and improving their chances of conceiving before or while trying to have a baby. 1 in 7 couples end up trying for over a year and then are often shuttled into the medication or reproductive technologies route like IVF. Although there is a time and a place for these tools, so many couples would have different outcomes if they had the education, resources, and support I provide in my Fertility Formula program. This program is a step-by-step, doctor-designed, holistic fertility solution for the couple who wants to conceive optimally. And it includes everything a couple needs to know with all of the resources I've created over many years seeing patients in practice. From mastering the cycle to boosting egg and sperm quality, balancing hormones, investigating female and male fertility, having access to order your own labs, both hormones and functional medicine labs, nourishing the body with eating and managing that whole aspect, fostering fertility energy, ditching toxins, reducing stress, rebalancing the gut and vaginal microbiomes, and detoxing prior to pregnancy, this program has it all. On top of that, it includes the bonus modules of breaking up with birth control, optimizing IVF if that ever becomes needed, and my pregnancy loss guide. This is the holistic information and step-by-step guidance you aren't getting from your regular doctor that will only improve your chances of conception and the health of your future baby, no matter where you are along your fertility journey, or no matter what support you might need, whether that's getting pregnant naturally or going through IUI or IVF.
Visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off the entire program. Again, that's www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.